Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. And we're back. We're speaking ahead of United season resuming. It feels like the World Cup finished only yesterday. Or maybe it was the day before. Oh, very weird. But this isn't weird. Let's introduce you to some friends. We've got Laurie Whitwell and Andy Mitten with us. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Laurie.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks, Laurie. Andy, you all right?
All good, mate. Looking forward to this. Looking forward to Christmas.
Absolutely. Did you enjoy Martinez not kicking a ball in the final for Argentina?
Well, he got his hand on the trophy, which was the main thing, right? At least United have got a World Cup winner. I saw a stat. I think he's either fifth player to win a World Cup whilst playing for United, which seems mad.
Yeah, but you can't name one of them.
Well, I can name one. Bobby Charlton.
Well, sorry. I'm sure you can name one of them, but there's one that I never would have got
in a million
years.
I saw the list. Who was it? There's three Englishmen, aren't there? And then there's one.
There's two very famous Englishmen on the list, Bobby Charlton and Nobby Styles. The third player, I have to admit, I didn't know who he was. I had to Google it, which I should be ashamed to say that, really.
Andy's probably going to interview with him.
Probably rolling his eyes like, oh.
No, I'm not. I'm not. But if you tell me who it is.
John Connolly,
yeah. Ran a fish and chip shop in Burnley and was a key player for United winning the league in 1965.
He actually started the first game of the 1966 World Cup as well. That's amazing. I just didn't know his story, basically.
And Andy knows him.
And Andy's been to his fish and chip shop and had cod and chips, yeah, with mushy peas on the side. You're a curry sauce man as well, Andy, or not?
No.
Filth near your fish?
Pie, peas, gravy. Don't have curry sauce on chips. That should be banned.
How did I know he wouldn't have curry sauce on his chips?
What would they have made of salt bay, do you think? Because he was another guy that got his hands on the World Cup trophy.
Oh, that was weird, wasn't it?
That's a good point, Laurie, that. Because I was thinking about this last night in bed, which is a bit unusual. But I saw, and The Athletic mentioned this in that really big write-up on the World Cup, Messi blanking him. And I just thought, this guy's become massively famous, basically because he puts salt on steaks. And people buy into it. I love the description in The Guardian from Barney Roney. He said, it's where idiots go to eat.
And rich idiots.
I just think he's a construct of like this world we live in where people want to be photographed and on social media boasting that they've spent 200 quid on a steak in gold. And I was thinking things like, does having gold wrapped around a piece of meat enhance the meat, or is this just pure show? But it's proper footballers bling bling, isn't it? It's on like that destination, let's go to Dubai.
Well, I'll let you into a secret. Putting the salt off your elbow doesn't make any difference to seasoning the meat either, Andy. So I'm not sure that the gold is really adding much either.
Nah. It's I just wonder how long the shelf life of something like this, because he gets absolutely savaged by proper restaurant critics.
But he opened one in London, though, didn't he? We're talking about him, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, he's opened one in London. And there's probably enough people with money in London who will go for it. So, you know, what's the saying? A fool and his money will easily be parted. It's a great example of it.
Ooh, a bit of philosophy on the podcast to kick us off as well. Very nice. Well, Erik ten Hag needs some philosophy dealing with Rafael Varane as well, Laurie. How do you see that one playing out? Because he'll be hugely disappointed and he could be injured as well by the look of the way he left the field.
Yeah, he went down quite badly, didn't he? But I mean, I'd had a few messages yesterday. It sounds like it was exhaustion. He played a lot of football after not playing for a fair bit, wasn't it? It was the Chelsea game where he went off injured month out and then he didn't start the World Cup. But he came in and actually had a really good tournament, I think, in the end. So hopefully he's got that experience of winning trophies. It's not like, you know, he hasn't won it already. So at least that's something, you know, it's you hope that the mental side of things will be okay. Him and Martinez had a nice moment, didn't they, after the full-time whistle. You could see Martinez consoling him. So you hope he comes back with a pep in his step. Varane and him will both get a week off now.
Is that right?
Yeah. Depends whether Ten Hag, you know, I suppose they'll come back for maybe one or two sessions before the Forest game. And it just depends whether he thinks that's enough for them to go straight back in, or whether, you know, you've got the Burnley game, haven't you? So is that a trial run for Maguire and Lindelof? You know, it's a partnership that they've used before, so it's not like it's a novice duo. So maybe that'll be the one for Forest, because it's quite, I mean, we're away for 45 days. I mean, I saw that Lionel Messi sort of gathering his team around, you know, as they were taking that final step, with quite emotional and quite powerful statement that he was saying. But he was mentioning how they've been away for 45 days. So you kind of think in that kind of, you know, atmosphere, that kind of pressure, and then the extreme ecstasy to kind of give, you know, Martinez certainly a bit of time just to decompress, and then Varane sort of similarly to kind of get over any exhaustion that he might have, or kind of, sadness about losing the final, then I think that's probably a smart move.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a few assessments to make, isn't there, about how players come back from this tournament. And that's part of the challenge for club managers, not just at Manchester United, but across the Premier League and Europe and the world as well. One interesting story as well that came out of the end of the World Cup in Qatar, Andy, David Ornstein's written about on The Athletic. You can go and read that piece, of course, on there if you want to. But Avram Glazer was there talking to what's been described as potential investors from Qatar and Saudi Arabia as well, David's been reporting. What's your reaction to that?
He's been spending a lot of time in that region. It's not just football related either, but cricket related. And I think for one of the owners of Manchester United to be in that part of the world during the World Cup finals is not a major surprise, as well as the football going on. It was a meeting of football people. There's a lot of backroom talk going on, as there always is around these tournaments, in those 5-6-star hotels in Doha. There were lots of people who weren't involved in it who just went along just to enjoy it. You know, it was a sunny place to go to. I saw Diego Simeone, for example, was there for the full duration with his family. And for them, it's almost like it's a rest and a nice place to go in their eyes. With the Glazers, they're not directly the ones who are supposed to be seeking potential suitors for Manchester United. But we know how this game works. It's, you know, if you're building up relationships, and you know, the Glazers have not ruled out this idea of getting investment rather than a complete sale. And people we've spoke to, and it was in Laurie's Athletic piece, the idea of giving up a bit of the club, or someone paying billions not to have control, is a little bit far-fetched, but you could see how it would totally suit the Glazers. Yeah, you give us a couple of billion and we keep control. But I don't have anything concrete on any definite suitors. Manchester United are a massive name, but the price which is being bandied around, which the Glazers are asking for, it also seemed to be prohibitively high.
Yeah, Andy mentioned it there, Laurie, but you did a piece tail end the last week about what we're hearing about the sale of Manchester United that's on The Athletic as well. What do you understand to be the latest?
Yeah, it was really interesting, actually, that we had a couple of stories about Avram Glazer out in Qatar, because Adam Lenthal managed to get him speaking outside the Morocco-France game. Incredible get to spot him and then to have the wherewithal to kind of chase after him and get him to speak on the record.
You'd definitely spot him. I don't think there's many people rocking that particular look that he has.
Fair enough. Maybe it's quite a distinctive appearance.
a good get, but an easy spot, I would say.
Okay. In the throng of people. And he actually, Adam asked him, you know, what about the sale process? And he kind of corrected him in his mind anyway to say it's not necessarily a sale, which I found was actually quite instructive. You know, you get a few seconds with these guys. I mean, it's so rare that he even speaks on camera. You know, I think there's a Sky News one last year that they managed to get an event, but it's you know, just a very, you know, infrequent occurrence. So for him to actually say that was kind of a little indication of where he's coming from. Now, there's maybe all manner of reasons for that. Maybe that's him and Joel as a United front. There's also other people that suggest to me that actually Joel is more open to the sale than Avram now. You know, he's sort of changed his mind since the summer. You know, we've obviously spoken about the fact that they wanted to try and buy out the siblings in the summer with these talks. there's other people that say to me, you know, the Arab states, you know, the Middle East don't see the value in Premier League. You know, Saudi Arabia have already got their purchase with Newcastle. Qatar have got PSG, and it is all the, you know, I don't think they're, you know, they've got lots of money, but I don't think they'll want to just, you know, spend for the sake of it. I think they see these things as investments rather than, you know, and obviously it's soft power. It's a chance to broadcast your nation to the world and kind of diversify your economy from just, you know, gas and oil. But I don't think they're going to want to just pay, you know, over the odds for this, you know, for this club. And I mean, is it useful for Avram Glazer to be seen speaking to these people or to have this kind of story out there to kind of show that there's interest in United? You know, I could well see that as a potential, you know, Rain, their whole, you know, agenda is to drum up interest and make sure that, you know, there's kind of a hotly contested bidding process, because that's how you get the most value for your asset. So, yeah, they're all different considerations. Yeah, it's like the transfer business, isn't it? It's like who do you believe? You know, where do you put your faith? We'll see when it shakes down. But it certainly, as Andy mentioned, it's certainly been a place where people have gathered, not just for the football, but for a chance to mingle. It's been a month, you know, away before a transfer window. I spoke to a couple of agents that have been out there, and, you know, and certainly owners have been out there. Marinakis, Christian Perslow for Aston Villa, you know, chief executive, they've been out there. I think Todd Boehly as well at Chelsea. So people have been out there to kind of meet and rub shoulders with other people. So it's been a networking event as well.
Okay. Well, if you want updates on the situation with a potential sale for Manchester United, of course, keep your eyes peeled to The Athletic. Lots of great writing on there on that topic, and also everything Manchester United, including what we're going to talk about later on the podcast as well. If you're not a subscriber, you can sign up now to The Athletic with our special podcast price. You'll pay less than £2 per month for your first year when you go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right, well, one of those articles that I just teased a moment ago was about transfers. Andy Mitten's written it. We promised on the last podcast that we'd bring an update ahead of the January transfer window, and Andy Mitten is dropping names like you wouldn't believe. Andy, take it away.
Yeah, Mbappe's going to join on the 1st of January. He's going to play in the World Cup, finally played quite well, and Messi will be coming as well. So the stories that have gone out there is all based from coming from Erik ten Hag. He would like to strengthen Manchester United, naturally so, having lost Cristiano Ronaldo. We don't know when Jadon Sancho is going to be coming back either. And top manager likes top players is hardly a shock. And some of the names that he said that he really likes are the names which probably everybody in football likes.
Who are the names, Andy?
We put in the Athletic last week that he was still interested in Frenkie de Jong. Still interested. Yeah, he plays for a team in Barcelona, something like that.
Yeah, I'm not going to play that game again. We even had a team. For newer listeners who have a clue what I'm on about, but yeah, go back and listen to the summer.
And that might surprise people, but I think the communication's open. What he's not doing is he's closing it down, because Frenkie de Jong is obviously still a very good player. He mentioned Jude Bellingham as well, in a way that, like, you know, Jude Bellingham is a great player. Why wouldn't Manchester United be in the conversation for him?
Bit of history on that one, though, as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. United seriously went for him and were prepared to pay, I think, 36 million. Did a big presentation to him. So did Manchester City, so did Borussia Dortmund. United wheeled out all the big guns to try and get him to sign, but felt that his family had decided on Dortmund because, not without reason, they felt that he would become a regular first-team player at an early age than he would if he moved to Manchester. Dortmund said, look, this is our track record. We're not going to stand in his way in a couple of years' time if he wants to move on. So Ten Hag saying that Manchester United should be in the conversation for Bellingham wouldn't surprise anybody. I'm a bit more worried that every single player who comes from Dortmund to United seems to flop, but you can't hold that against the club forever. I think a right back, a forward, but as United have said, top clubs don't want to sell their best forwards in the January transfer window. Add to that United overspent in the summer transfer window as well. And the idea of United bringing in huge name signings in January, I think, is improbable. Also, United have said they don't want cheap loan options who are not going to improve the squad. So when I heard that, I was just thinking back to the striker came in from Watford a couple of years ago.
Dinigalo.
Didn't really work out for Odion, yeah. Although COVID kicked in just as after he'd had his first decent game away at LASK. So there's loads of names, you know, Laurie's heard names as well. Names have been written about. Cody Gapco keeps being spoken about from PSV. I wouldn't be surprised if Manchester United continue to recruit next summer, bring in three or four players. However, what we now have is the uncertainty. We don't know who the owners are going to be. So it's all right, the manager saying, yes, I love all these fantastic players. Ultimately, it's not even his decision because there's instability, and that's not good for the markets. It's not good for any manager.
No, Cody Gakpo, that said, is the name that doesn't seem to be going away, Laurie. We know that United, and we've spoken about it on the podcast, you've written about it a lot as well, were sort of close to getting that deal done in the summer and decided against it. What we've seen since from him at club level and now in the World Cup will only show that United were right to be interested in him and maybe wrong to decide against it in the end.
Yeah, I suppose it came down to finance, didn't it? Erik ten Hag wanted Antony and Ajax had a certain price. You know, we spoke to Edwin van der Sar on this trip and he was saying that you know they didn't want to sell him and that was what, then if they were going to sell him, that was the price. You know, no ifs and buts about it, and that's ultimately what United got to. So that then made those conversations regarding Cody Gakpo less relevant because they had a certain amount of money and they, as Andy said, they already overspent on that. So, you know, they did actually agree personal terms with his representatives, which we've spoken about. And I think he's been very open about his mindset in the summer where he mentioned, I think he thought at one point he probably was going to sign for Man United. And then I know there was Leeds and Southampton as well. And you kind of think, I mean, he chose right to not kind of dive into the Premier League at that point because he's had a good World Cup where he's enhanced his reputation. We watched him for PSV away at Ajax in that game. He made an assist for Luke de Jong. Really nice cross it was. And he probably could have had another one actually from the other side as well. And, you know, it's obviously centre forward is the big position that United need. Cristiano Ronaldo going out the club is, you know, whilst he wasn't, you know, Erik ten Hag's ideal for a centre forward, he was still capable of scoring goals. He scored the winner at Everton. So, you really have to replace that. And with Anthony Martial, you know, OK, he's back now, but he's had three different injuries this season already. Marcus Rashford could play there for sure. He did well against Arsenal, didn't he, up front. But it's not necessarily his best position. Could Cody Gakpo come in and, you know, he played up front for Holland. He's performed that role. His best position is off the left. But Erik ten Hag has shown that he has been able to kind of coach players into new positions and or enhance, you know, other positions that they've not necessarily played loads of time in. So, yeah, I would imagine that he's someone that United will have another conversation about in January because PSV, you know, I think Ruud van Nistelrooy last week said that there's only so long you can say no to a player, you know, in terms of letting them go. His contract's until 2026, but I do think I hear sort of suggestions that PSV might have a financial imperative to sell, you know, at the right moment. I know €50 million was kind of privately what they were hoping for in the summer, which is a bit more than I think what was being reported at the time. And maybe that's a negotiation, but, you know, you can kind of see where that would come from. And I think it basically, as Andy's mentioned, the club's up for sale. So do the Glazers. It's business as usual. That's what we're told. So, you know, Joel is still communicating, I think, with you know, Richard Arnold, chief exec, and you know, that kind of level of dialogue. But do they think, okay, well, actually, if we sign this player for X amount of money, that then enhances our chance of getting in the Champions League and that increases the value of the club overall to a potential buyer? Or do they think, well, you know, it's not really, we kind of have to be, you know, tight on finances because we are in the process of selling the club and we don't want to kind of make any more major, you know, commitments to money.
We don't want more debt.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the debt, as we spoke about last week, it's, you know, £1 billion. So what's another 50 million?
They don't seem bothered.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Andy?
Gonçalo Ramos, the Benfica striker, was someone who Eric Ten Hag also liked. Benfica's whole business model is about developing players, either bringing them through the youth system or bringing them from South America and selling them to Premier League clubs for 50 million. They're quite honest about that. But then they're under no pressure to sell. They're still in the Champions League. They're top of the league in Portugal. They got a lot of money last year from Damian Nunes. With Cody Gakpo, I remember speaking to basically PSV in August, and it's like, it's going nowhere because we're still in the Champions League and he's not ready yet. That was the feeling. He's not ready to be playing in England. As soon as Rangers knocked PSV out of the Champions League, I got a message. Yeah, we're not in the Champions League anymore. And obviously not. You know, everyone can see that there was a game last night where 50,000 people watched it. So maybe that happened a little bit late, but as Laurie said, Anthony was the absolute target. Manchester United ended up paying all that money for him. And the idea that he's not ready, well, that looks a little bit jaundiced now, that view, because he showed in the World Cup that he looks like he's absolutely ready.
Yeah, there's something about his record for PSV before the World Cup which suggested that as well, to be fair. He's had an absolutely brilliant season so far. So he's definitely a player that they'll face more competition on.
I do think there'll probably be more clubs in the mix for him. And it comes down to really whether, you know, Erik ten Hag will be a part of this conversation very much so. Does he think that it's worth spending some money now if he can, you know, convince the owners or, you know, whoever might be a part of that conversation to spend the money now because it'll come off the summer budget, you know, really? That's the ultimate sort of domino effect. Or is there a low cost centre forward, an experienced centre forward that they can get that's out there. You know, I don't know if there is. I think the recruitment department have had a look and they kind of don't really see loads of options out there that would kind of enhance United to that degree. So I don't know. It's going to be a really interesting kind of conversation behind closed doors to see what they actually end up doing.
So, as we record this podcast then, we are just over 24 hours away from Manchester United kicking a football in a competitive scenario. Again, they take on Burnley in the League Cup. And I think the one thing that United fans, Andy, are looking forward to is seeing Anthony Martial back playing, hopefully back being fit, because he's had this period to get sorted. You've seen him in action during this break as well. How likely is it that he starts the season when it restarts as the first choice centre forward for United?
I think United fans would love to see him playing and playing well and not being injured and getting a good run of games under his belt. I think he'd started only two Premier League matches. It's not good enough if you're going to be relied upon by your manager. So there's so many games coming up now. I'd love him to go right through, get a decent win against a very good Burnley team managed by Vincent Kompany. They look like the probably going to come straight back up to the Premier League. They've sold almost 7,000 away tickets. The Old Trafford capacity is being reduced, which caused a little bit of concern last week when that came out from people who'd bought tickets. That said, one of our editors at The Athletic went on United's website yesterday and managed to get a ticket for him and his son. So there are still...
Oh?
Yeah, that's what I was surprised at that. Sam, who Laurie and I both work with. So big game. Amazed that the crowds are so big for Europa League and League Cup this year. If Anthony Martial can come in, if Manchester United can play well, just play a competitive game, win it, get through to the next round of the Cup, and then that just sets up the whole mood going through all those games, which on the face of it, you know, Forest, Bournemouth, Wolves are not having good seasons, but we've seen United get tripped up so many times before, and we don't know what it's going to be like because the team haven't played since that match at Fulham. We just don't know. So just settle everything down with a decent win against Burnley. Away we go. Win the league, win the Europa League, win the FA Cup, win the Carabao Cup. Decent season.
There's been quite a few managers complaining, understandably, about this round of League Cup games taking place so soon after the World Cup, Laurie. But actually, is it helpful to Erik ten Hag to have this match before the Premier League kicks off just to see where everyone's at and try and find a little bit of rhythm?
I think so. And I know that it seems incredibly quick turnaround from the final being, you know, a couple of days ago, and then now here we are, you know, looking forward to a club match. But actually, if you look at the players that Ten Hag will have had available to him, it is only Martinez and Varane that have kind of, you know, had that extra week out. So the players are in a rhythm of playing. I think we saw that with the kind of quality of the knockout rounds. The football was great, wasn't it? So you kind of wonder that, okay, there's quite a lot of nil-nils to start with. Was that because teams were coming together without any warm-up matches, and they kind of had to get settled into a bit of a rhythm, but then they got into that stride, and it feels like maybe actually let them keep playing because, you know, they don't seem sapped of energy apart from, you know, like I say, probably Rafael Varane who was injured beforehand anyway. So yeah, I think he'd be thankful for it, and it gives him a chance just to, you know, because the matches in Spain, I know they were just tune-ups, but it wasn't great, was it, from a performance perspective? So I think he needs something that can kind of get a bit of energy back into the team.
Availability of players as well.
Yeah.
The players who are likely to play in these games, probably a majority of them weren't available for the family.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, so they had a day off yesterday, which was Monday. I think they're due back in today, Tuesday. You'd expect all the England boys to be back in amongst it. You know, and as we spoke about last week, Luke Shaw, Marcus Rashford, Harry Maguire all had good tournaments. So you kind of think that that's actually a good thing to get them back in and sort of playing straight away, really. And Bruno Fernandes, Diogo Dalot, you know, these guys have had, it's not like they were playing just, you know, the weekend. They've had a bit of time off anyway.
We're due a bit of something, aren't we, at home as well in the Cups? Because last season was so disappointing, wasn't it? To watch United go out of all the Cup competitions at home at Old Trafford, especially that Middlesbrough game as well in the FA Cup. I mean, that was absolutely shocking, wasn't it, looking back? But we can't take anything for granted against Burnley, Laurie, can we? Because you look at how well they've done so far in a very, very competitive league, as we know. And the interesting factor, I think, as well, is that they're almost unrecognisable from the Burnley that we've seen in the Premier League in recent years. You read the team sheet even from the Middlesbrough game at the weekend. There's only three or four of them who were even there last season who started that match. Company might make changes, of course, for this game, but it's not going to be long ball Burnley, is it? It's going to be totally different.
No, it's a really young team as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've not followed them extremely closely, so forgive me if I'm calling it a little bit wrong, but I've seen that they're actually playing more dynamic football. I mean, that's what you'd kind of expect, right? When Vincent Kompany comes in and you know, it's moving the dial on from a Sean Dyche team that obviously did really well for them in a particular style, but clearly, you know, they've had that run now. You kind of think, you can understand why they're trying something different, and actually it's working for them. Okay, they've got the parachute payments, and you know, they are one of the wealthier clubs in that division, probably the wealthiest, but they still, you know, it's not that straightforward to kind of go down, change your team and then keep winning. So and they're doing that really well. I mean, I'm just looking at the results now. It's what, 8 wins out of 9, you know, in all different competitions. So they're obviously on a good run, and I know they've been away for a bit, but you know, you'd expect them to kind of come back. And yeah, as you say, that game on Saturday against Middlesbrough, good win. And they had a, you know, player, Colin Roberts, got sent off in the sort of last minute, so they managed to hold out for the win there.
Did you see him getting sent off?
No, go on, what happened?
No, it was handball on the line, but didn't it? His hand hit the bar by the look of the replays anyway. So I don't know if that's been rescinded yet or is being looked at.
Oh, so he's got it overturned then maybe?
Well, his wife started a campaign on social media, I think, by doing a slow-mo or a recording of the slow-mo on the TV and putting it out there. And everyone was sort of retweeting it and everything at the weekend. So I'm interested to see how Mrs. Roberts' campaign's gone if they are married.
Well yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. But after your mention of Middlesbrough last season, so there's been a handball that should have been given last season and then a handball that was given that shouldn't have been.
Well, there you go.
You know, this might all turn around in Burnley's favour.
I don't know.
I thought you were going to say, Ian, that we need a little bit of something with the home games. I was hoping you weren't going to say a home draw. Six consecutive home draws in the Cup now for Manchester United.
Is that right?
And we can say, well, what are the odds on that? And I did ask that. And
everyone's looking at the direct debits coming out as well, aren't they? Looking forward to that. Yeah,
yeah, they took the money out straight away. Duncan Quinton, who listens to this podcast, said actually the odds are 63-1 of that happening. There's a 1.6% chance of that happening. So given the certainty in which I replied to that, I'm just trusting it. I'm not a mathematician, but six straight home draws. That's mad. Six. I've never known that at all.
Yeah. It'd be just good to see United playing again, really, won't it, after this World Cup? Of course, soon after that, the match is on the 27th then, essentially the Boxing Day fixture, but a day later for United, against Nottingham Forest. I'm really, really intrigued to see Jesse Lingard back at Old Trafford, Laurie. There's a lovely piece by Paul Taylor, an interview with Jesse, talking about a few random things on The Athletic at the moment, but also talking about the football and about the emotion of coming back to Old Trafford. If there's been a player with a point to prove in recent times coming back, I'm struggling to remember one with more than Jesse in some ways, because it was odd when he came back from West Ham, wasn't it, for him? And he's spoken about some of the problems that he suffered that maybe contributed to the fact that he didn't play a great deal for United.
Yeah, he's a good talker, Jesse Lingard. I think he's at heart a nice guy, clearly loves his football, and it just wasn't. You sort of reflect back on that summer where really United should have sold him. You know, he had a really good loan spell at West Ham, and again, we talk about different versions of truths, but you know, was it that Solskjaer didn't think he would get a replacement in during that summer, so wanted to kind of keep on a player that was in a good mode, you know, just for kind of security reasons, or was it that the player himself didn't want to go to certain clubs that were coming to him, or was it that no clubs actually put the right bid in that United wanted? But on reflection, you sort of think it was a bit of a wasted season after that, wasn't it? And you know, he seems to be part of a Nottingham Forest team that, you know, they've struggled. You know, they've had a lot of new players coming in, but there's fight about them. You know, that whole mad week that happened with Steve Cooper, where it looked like he was going to get sacked, and then he ended up with a new contract. I guess that's just what you get when you've got Marinakis as your owner, but so you know, it's never a dull moment. But I think in terms of Jesse's career, you know, at least he's in a place where they clearly value him. They've obviously pushed the boat out financially to make sure that he's felt the love, and with a supporter base that I think if you play with energy and heart and you know, they've kind of willed their team to victory so far this season at the City Ground. So you kind of think that he has, it kind of, he'll buy into that. And yeah, I think you always just wish former players the best. But it was the right time for him to go. He wasn't at the level that United needed to push on. You know, but in different circumstances, maybe he could have been that kind of squad player that could, you know, work well. But it gone sour, hadn't it? So you can, you know, it was the right thing for him to move on.
How do you reflect on Lingard, Andy, and him coming back?
Mixed feelings about him as a player and a person. I spoke to a Forest fan last week who said he's actually starting to play well, like the team. They struggled at the start of the season, but they've lost one in five. They've come off the bottom of the table. And the Forest fan said to me, look, we just need to stay up this year. That's what it's all about. Because there was upheaval in the summer with all those changes. And as Laurie said, with the manager, we didn't know what was going to happen there. I think on his day, Laurie, I was going to say Laurie could be a very good Premier League player, and he might well be a very good player. But Jesse Lingard proved that at West Ham. It was the right time for him to go. He's got his version as why he wasn't allowed to go. In hindsight, United should have cashed in and got good money for him when his stock was at his highest. His people were pushing for him to go a year ago. United ended up letting him go and not making the type of money that an established player like him should have got.
Paul writes in the piece that Jesse, in answer to his question, are you misunderstood, says yes. Sorry to sort of cut it off at a random point and take it in a different direction, but how do you think he's misunderstood? How do you think Jesse feels?
I think there's a perception about him which is different to his own perception of himself. I think he had a lot of stick when he played for Manchester United, and it comes in waves of stick, and fans can be quite selective how they remember players. And going back to your first question, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't get a warm response in person at Old Trafford, because I think in real life that's what humans tend to be like, and it's very different to social media. He's not done anything majorly to annoy Manchester United fans. He came through the youth system. He's from Warrington. He's a local lad. He scored some very important goals for Manchester United. I remember writing about him in August 19 and being struck by the amount of vitriol in response to the piece. It was like 99%, get this man out of the club, he's a disgrace. And I thought, that's too strong.
Because of what? Because of the celebrations. And I mean, there's always the same thing that's referenced, which is the fashion launch ahead of the Liverpool game, was it?
Yeah. I mean, that divides people. It just does do. He's moving now into NFTs and the metaverse, and it divides people, and I can see why it divides people. I'd have a different view to some of his celebrations than my brother. I asked him, my brother, about it 2 years ago, my youngest brother, when he was 14. He's like, oh, I love it. I love his dancing. Do I love him in a Miami hotel room going beans, beans, beans? No, I don't. But then there's different demographics within the fan base. And there's also a question of timing. So when his official Twitter account put out an announcement during the memorial for the Munich air disaster, that was horrendous timing. And he backtracked and he apologised. And to be fair to him, he probably knew nothing about that. And it's just about the type of people who you surround yourself with.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're dancing around going beans, 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 and you've just won the treble, there's no issue with that at all. So I just don't always think he made the wisest decisions. But as Laurie said, I know people who know him well and speak of a good person there. And there's been significant changes in his private life. He's spoken about them. And he probably, well, he said it, he feels misunderstood.
Get back to the football then. How do you see this game going, Laurie? Again, it's Burnley might give us a clue, but it'll be fascinating to see exactly how United try and pick up some rhythm. Because actually, it was a shame that we weren't able to build on that win at Fulham and everything that came with it.
Yeah, and so you kind of want a game straight afterwards, right? And particularly with Alejandro Garnacho winning it in the way that he did. Can you keep that momentum going? I don't know. I mean, you just think that United should beat Forest, you know, pretty easily. But then, they've kind of got their act a bit more together. And you know, Steve Cooper's a good manager. He obviously had that success with England under 17s, and he came in last season when Forest were at a very low ebb, and the fact that they're even in the Premier League, you know, within a year of that is remarkable, really. But then, you know, I think they have to, if Forest are going to, you know, do a number on United, it's going to have to be a 1-0, right? Then they're not going to score loads of goals. I'm looking at their results now.
Oh, the Liverpool one stands out, that 1-0.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the Alamo, wasn't it?
Well, that's it. I mean,
Dean Henderson.
Yeah, and even the last one, Palace.
Had a great
Palace,
game that day. 1-0. That won't happen.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he won't play, will he? Because he'll be, the loan won't allow, so
yeah, exactly.
That's kind of one former United player that we don't have to.
Probably a good job, actually, because if we're talking about players getting receptions coming back to Old Trafford, he was fairly pointed in his interview when he first.
Yeah, I wonder
Forest.
If he'll be at the game. You presume he might be. That's a really fascinating aspect.
Won't he be hiding from Erik ten Hag?
Well, possibly. I don't know if ten Hag. I think ten Hag would be, you know, kind of nonplussed by it, because he didn't really have a chance to speak to him, so he probably won't feel any particular, you know, grievance about it. The goalkeeper situation is actually quite interesting. You know, when you look at David De Gea, is he what United want? Is it what Ten Hag wants long term? You know, his contract's up in the summer if they don't trigger the plus one. And that's something we might see this week, some of the plus ones looked at, you know, with Rashford,
yes.
Dalot, Shaw. But yeah, in terms of the goalkeeper situation, Henderson, you kind of think maybe the lesson could be heeded from the Lingard thing, where, you know, actually, if he goes and continues to have a pretty good season for Forest, you know, sell him for a good value rather than try and retain him and, you know, cause this kind of friction that then led him to speak out the way he did, and actually, you know, be assertive in that situation. And, you know, I mean, then you look at Dubravka, who's on loan, and Tom Heaton, whose contract's up as well. It could be, you know, if Ten Hag wants it to be, or if United feel like they've got the flexibility to make it so, it could be a whole new goalkeeper department come next summer.
Yeah, it's certainly something to keep an eye on, isn't it? One last person to reflect on this podcast, if we can, because we've mentioned him a little bit on this pod and we mentioned him a little bit on the last pod, but probably not enough given his situation that you've written about, Andy. Jadon Sancho. We're not totally sure whether he's going to be involved in the Burnley game or the Nottingham Forest game, to be fair. Erik ten Hag has said that he needs, well, he's got issues physically and mentally that he needs to resolve before he can come back to playing for United. What do you understand to be this situation with Jadon Sancho, and when do you think we'll see him next?
I wrote the piece in The Athletic using quotes from Erik ten Hag. He's not been exiled or dropped from the squad, but United's manager and United fans felt that you could see that his form was dropping. He looked absolutely short of confidence. I think the best example was in that game against Omonia Nicosia in Cyprus, when I spoke to a manager the day after that, and he just said, when you're a Manchester United forward and you've not got the confidence to run at a Cypriot defender and instead pass the ball back and that led to a mistake and a goal, you've got an issue there. So Erik ten Hag felt that a complete reset was a good idea for him. The idea is that he wants him to succeed just as a player wants to succeed, and he will get further chances, no doubt about it, at Manchester United. He went to Holland, has been training with coaches who Erik ten Hag has worked with in the past, and in his professional opinion, it was better for him to do that than to go to Spain and get drenched every day, because it absolutely lagged it down in the sunniest sea in Europe. I wish him well. I hope he comes back. I hope he plays well. He had a really good pre-season. He scored that great goal against Liverpool, which raised the roof at Old Trafford, and he wasn't doing badly, but then it just sort of, it just fell apart. And I remember seeing him go off against Chelsea away when United played really well, but he didn't. He'd given the ball.
Last time we saw him play.
He gave the ball away two or three times in that match, and you really noticed it because it was a high-standard game. You could see that he was frustrated with himself. And as you say, he's not played a minute in any of the six games for Manchester United before the World Cup started. But he had a really good pre-season, and we were thinking, okay, this is going to start for him, because last season was also disappointing. He wasn't scoring enough at all. This is the third most expensive English player ever. Someone we spoke about an awful lot. But as Ten Hag said, we didn't see him in the last games for United. He wasn't in the right status, in the right fitness state. So now he's on an individual programme, and we want him to finish that programme. And hopefully we will see him back soon. And I think everyone would echo those thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. The World Cup and not making it as well, Laurie, would have been a disappointment to Jadon, because I'm sure the way this season started for him, the way we felt and the way he was playing, he looked like he was going to be on that plane to Qatar, and that would have been a huge blow to him. But yeah, it's difficult to know what to make of this, really, isn't it, when Ten Hag's saying what he said?
Yeah, I remember writing a piece after the Sheriff game where he'd scored another lovely finish away, you know, in September, and that was when the squad had kind of come out, the latest England squad, and you know, it was kind of like, okay, this is actually a bit of a riposte from him, and it felt like he'd got his gear together, you know, and so it does, I don't know, I didn't see it coming, to be honest. I thought he did really well in pre-season. I thought, okay, this could be the season that he flourishes, because last season I did hear that, and I think we wrote about that, there was, you know, he came in with this ear infection that had kind of stopped his you know, getting a running start to the season. You know, was confidence an issue? You know, United is quite an overwhelming situation for certain people, you know, for all players, really.
Well, I think the circumstance of the penalty shootout and the racist abuse that he suffered afterwards coming back to England, we've talked about it on here before, but that must have been a hugely, hugely difficult situation to step back into England to deal with for Jadon. And then not to mention what you're talking about, which is the eyes on you playing for United. You know, it is a massively challenging situation, that, for anyone, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's you know, come on then, deliver for us. And, you know, that, you know, we probably expect it of players, you know, perhaps without really thinking about what that does, you know, psychologically. But and this isn't to say that he needs, you know, cotton wool wrapping around him, but at the same time, it does feel like, from what Erik ten Hag's saying, and the fact that he wasn't away with the squad in Spain, that it's, you know, it's a serious situation that he wants to have, you know, full focus on, you know, whilst so he has full isolated focus on it, rather than it be with a group and he can't get that kind of one-to-one, you know, attention. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know, the suggestion that I got was that it wasn't necessarily a guarantee that he'd be back for the Burnley game, you know, and then maybe even the Forest game after that. It's something that they're kind of going to take day by day. There's obviously, as Ten Hag mentioned, there's a fitness situation to it. But, you know, I mean, I remember that Chelsea game, you know, he played and he wasn't good in it, but it didn't feel at that moment that that would be the last we'll see of him for, well, it's 2 months now. I know, obviously, the World Cup's a month of that, but it was a month of United fixtures and he was on the bench for the next couple after that and then he wasn't in the squad at all. So, you know, I guess that's been... That's the hint that something even back then was an issue. When he's had talks with Ten Hag, they've had, you know, one-to-one conversations, and this is something that together they've felt that is the right solution. So I hope it does work because he's obviously a really talented player there. You know, you can't score the goal that he scored against Liverpool with the calmness that he has, you know, the kind of close control that he's got without being a great player. I suppose, you know, the historical version of a United winger is to take players on and kind of drive at them, and that's not really his game. His game is, you know, 1-2s around the box. It's a tight control. It's understanding your teammates. And I suppose if you're not in the flow of that, then it's difficult to kind of ignite yourself. And maybe that's what they're trying to get with this sort of training program.
He'd not actually played for England in over a year, so add to them 23 caps. And remember at Leicester when the three of us did the podcast in the car park?
How can we forget?
He scored the winning goal, and that was September. And that came a week after being applauded off against Liverpool at Old Trafford when he had a really, really good game. And after that game in Leicester, he and only he came to speak to the journalists in the mix zone. And I was struck by how polite he was. He shook our hands. That's not normal. It's like, normally it's like, I don't really want to be here. It's like, aye, nice to see you, shaking hands with everybody. Give pretty decent answers as well. And I remember walking to meet you lads, and we spoke about him a bit on that podcast, and thinking it's coming good for him. And it's a shame that it's happened. Hopefully it'll be a blip, which where we look back and go, yeah, that was 6 to 8 games where things weren't working out. But I'd love to see him back involved. And against the teams, the fixture list coming up now, it looks pretty good for Manchester United, getting against those teams. 3 of the next league opponents are in the bottom 6. We didn't have that at the start of the season when he was doing well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We're due the easier games on paper, aren't we, because of how difficult the fixtures were before the World Cup. We all hope Jadon Sancho is back playing well for Manchester United as soon as possible, of course. If you want to know more about his situation, including what Erik ten Hag has had to say about it, and his piece is up on The Athletic now. If you're not a subscriber, you can sign up to The Athletic with our special podcast price. You'll pay less than £2 a month for the first year when you go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. We're going to be back then after that Forest game. We'll be back recording on the 28th of December. That's our last podcast for 2022. But for the minute, Andy, thank you very much for being with us again. Laurie, thank you as well. Merry Christmas. Blimey, it's happened, hasn't it? Have a good one, guys, and we'll see you on the next one. Thank you for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.